And I am Will Leach, and this is the very special, it's a very special episode, Grierson. A very special episode, Grierson Leach Podcast, episode number 48. As we mentioned in the last show, because the people are into the Star Wars, Grierson.
The people like the Star Wars.
We're still in the same room, by the way. We did not like leave and go in separate rooms. We were in the same room.
The last one did not go so badly. We did.
Yes, that's true. So the fist fight, we edited the fist fight out. So we are here to talk about Star Wars, Rogue One, a Star Wars story. People are into this movie. So this will be posting. You should be hearing this in your ears on Friday. So you got a chance, either whether you saw it on Thursday night or after the weekend. This will generally be, like most of our reviews, our best to be spoiler free. But if you are the type of person that's really into Star Wars, you should probably just go see the movie. I'm sure you're seeing it anyway to start the weekend. So this is solely a Star Wars focused podcast. And then this will actually be our final show until we do our big end of the year award. So this is our final shelter after Christmas. So I know you're going to miss us. We're going to miss you even more. But we're going to talk about Star Wars. First off, we remind you, as always, please subscribe to us on iTunes. Find us on SoundCloud and NewRepublic.com. Find us at Grierson Leach on Twitter. Email us, GriersonLeach@NewRepublic.com. Depending on whether or not you agree with our takes, our hot takes on Rogue One, a Star Wars story, you may or may not want to talk to us afterward. But Grierson, this is exciting for me. First of all, I have to thank you because I was able to see the movie actually at the premiere. I have to say, I don't like watching movies at premieres. I'd much rather watch them in the dark with a bunch of very silent, pasty schmucks like me that don't talk to one another. But nevertheless, thank you for as Mr. Fancy.
You're welcome.
It's also been a long time since I actually watched a movie with
you. I was actually thinking, when was the last time we saw a movie together?
It's been a while. It actually has been a while, considering I think all I did before the age of 18 was just see movies with you.
Right.
And so,
when was the last time? I meant to look this up, and I don't think I know off the top of my head.
Well, we'll think about it. Okay. But right now, we need to talk about Star Wars, because I'm excited because usually, you know, one of the fun things about seeing Star Wars is it's released very late to critics. They don't see it until right before it opens. So there's not a lot of pre-release buzz. Everyone has a lot of excitement about it. And the embargo is so strict and so intense that I have actually talked to no one so far about Rogue One Star Wars. I had many friends that knew I had seen it and they wanted me to talk about it. But this, I had to save it for my good friend Tim Grierson to talk about Rogue One. So Grierson, let's talk about Rogue One, a Star Wars story.
They have no idea we're coming.
Take hold of this moment. The force is strong.
Make 10 men feel like 100.
We'll take the next chance. Rebels, aren't you?
Save the rebellion! Save the dream!
All right, so Rogue One, Star Wars story, directed by Gareth Edwards, who did Godzilla. That was his big one, right?
He also did Monsters.
Monsters, yes. Yeah, Monsters with the crazy alien monster sex thing.
Yeah. Don't you see? We're the monsters.
We were the true monsters all along. But of course, Rogue One, Star Wars story, it takes place. It is about that weird moment in the first Star Wars movie, first original episode 4, where, hey, lots of people died to bring you the plans to kill this Death Star. This is the story of them trying to get the plans. Because that Death Star stars Felicity Jones as Jyn Erso. She is, we meet her at the beginning, her father, played by Mads Mikkelsen, is a very fancy pants scientist, and the Imperial Army needs him to make what turns out to be the Death Star. Her mother is killed. Then we meet years later after she is raised, apparently, by Forrest Whitaker, and then eventually she goes and leads a rogue group to go try to steal those plans for the Death Star. Along the way, there is a blind wannabe Jedi, there is a wisecracking robot, a cool Chappie, if you will.
Even cooler than Chappie.
So it's Rogue One. You know, it is, this is of course not what I found I think it's interesting the little differentiations they've made between this and the general series. There's no Skrull, for example. It's not really connected to... I mean, it's connected, but it's not like, you know, part of the next movie, which comes out next year, directed by Rian Johnson. That is the sequel to this. This has none of that. But, of course, some of the characters from the old movie come back. We see Darth Vader. We see Grand Moff Tarkin. We see Jimmy Smith's character, who I did not remember at all from those first prequels. But yes. Everyone in the theater seemed to react.
Yes.
So, Grierson, let's just get right into it. One of the weird things for me about seeing it in a premiere like we saw is it's a hot crowd. It's a hot crowd.
It's a crowd that appreciates Jimmy Smith is in this movie.
Yes. I mean, I'll put it this way. Kevin Smith was in the audience, and there were many other Kevin Smiths in the audience. It's probably the best way to think of that. So, you know, I think the audience, it was a hot crowd. But one thing I definitely noticed about the crowd, and this leads into one of the things I want to talk about the movie, most of the big reaction shots, in fact, I would almost argue all of the big reaction shots, were actually things that hark back to another movie. They hark back to another film. Hey, there's Jimmy Smith. Hey, look, there's the Walrus guy or something that I did not remember, but apparently everyone else did, and so I had to go look up whatever that was. Because, of course, I like the Star Wars movie, but, you know, Star Wars movies, we all like the Star Wars movies. But, you know, there is a depth that some people have that I don't know if I'm quite there on. But to me, what I found noteworthy about Rogue One, and frankly, ultimately very disappointing about Rogue One, is how... one of the things I liked about The Force Awakens was so much was, obviously, there's two things. One, it had characters that were, like, the new characters are fun. They're likable. They're easy to follow. They have recognizable motivations. They're easy to get into. They're not, unlike the two characters in this movie, particularly Diego Luna and Felicity Jones, who are wooden blocks. They feel like they come from the prequels, to be entirely honest with you. Her backstory... seems like the backstory seems to not make a lot of sense. The stuff with her father makes sense, but then Forrest Whitaker adopts her, and then just 13 years pass, and we really never see anything about that. Forrest Whitaker gives a very strange performance for a character that seems to make no sense. But the other thing that I liked about The Force Awakens that also this movie fails at, it's fun. Like, it's fun, it's joy. And by fun, I don't mean that, like, this movie has no fun moments. But there was a joy to The Force Awakens. Whatever reservations people may or may not have about The Force Awakens, there was a joy to everyone. You could almost see on Daisy Ridley and John Boyega's face that, like, holy shit, I'm in a Star Wars movie. And the audience shared that. And you could sense the excitement of J.J. Abrams to be making that movie. This movie does not have that. This movie feels oddly self-serious in a way that, frankly, reminded me a little bit of the prequels. Another thing that reminded me of the prequels, a lot of very unnecessary and quite distracting technological innovations, which I'm sure we'll get into. And it really has that whole idea of... it's so eager to, like, get into the world of the mythology. We talked about this. We talked about this with comic book movies, with Marvel, about how so many times the mythology of these movies gets in the way of the actual movie. Now, one of the nice things about Force Awakens is the mythology. They were just reconnecting to all of that, so they could do that with the joy of it all. Here, it feels like all the stuff involving Jyn Erso, involving Captain Andor, which is Diego Luna's character, it feels dutiful to get us to where we get to connect to the actual to the original movies in a way that doesn't have a lot of joy to it and doesn't have a lot of fun to it. And there are two. I'm going to talk about the robot very briefly, and then we'll get into it. The robot is voiced by Alan Tudyk. Is that the guy's name?
Yeah.
And he is. I called him sassy in my review. He's certainly wisecracking. He's a cool chappy, and he's worthy of some laughs. And there are some good lines. There's a few funny moments. But he feels so beamed in from another movie that I wonder if he was. There have been reports about early reshoots in this. It feels to me like a lot of that stuff feels like, wow, this thing is really dragging and is really serious. We need more wisecracking robot. And it feels that way. So I have to say, I'm going to get back to my point about the premiere crowd. That crowd was so hot. And, you know, and listen, no one, you know, I was curious when I got back after the movie. I went back and I was like, I know no reviews are going to be out on this, but I'm just curious if the experience that I had watching this movie was shared by anybody there. And of course, it was just a bunch of celebrities screaming selfies into their phone. Woo! Best movie ever. I'm telling you right now, there's a ton of goodwill obviously brought up by the Star Wars series. I think Rogue One is going to need every bit of that goodwill, because I do not think this is a very good movie at all.
This is my favorite Star Wars movie since Empire Strikes
Back. Jesus Christ!
I think it's fairly magnificent.
Wow! Come on, man. Let's go.
To me, the thing, there's several things I love about this movie. One of them is that I think this is the first movie that actually has an emotional depth to it since Empire Strikes Back. The prequel thing, I think it actually solves the problem of the prequels in a lot of ways, because what is different about Rogue One than a lot of, well, frankly, even the new Star Wars movies, but the Marvel movies and a lot of these long franchises, is it doesn't have the problem of, well, we have to keep extending this franchise, so these characters are all going to have to be around for three or four more installments.
Right.
And that this movie isn't going to have an ending, really, because we have to extend it for three or four movies after that. The Fantastic Beast problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even like
the thing we talked about.
Though. Yeah, even the Warcraft problem, for Christ's sake. What I think is among the many strengths of this movie is that, number one, you do not know who is going to make it out alive in this movie. Number two, it has an ending. And I don't want to get into the ending.
Of course, we won't.
But I think it is one of the very best endings in terms of an emotionally satisfying experience that ties the whole movie together. I think those are the two great things. And I think third of all, you know, when you're making like kind of like a standalone movie, and this is the first of the standalone movies in the Star Wars franchise, this is the first like Star Wars movie that legitimately feels like a commentary on the Star Wars mythos. And specifically what I think it does extraordinarily well is say, okay, there's Luke Skywalker, and there's Han Solo, and there's Chewbacca, and there's Princess Leia. There's all these people that you have loved for 40 years who have been so ingrained in the culture and are so important in terms of these movies. But there was actually this group of people who had to do this thing, and if they had not succeeded in doing that thing, that world would have never existed. And I have avoided Twitter since we went to the premiere on Saturday because I did not want to see anything.
Right.
But my understanding
nobody
is...
Nobody said anything anyway.
Right. But for instance, I know that the bigwigs at Disney have said, hey, there's no political commentary to this movie. I actually disagree, and I think that it's actually a very intelligently done one, which is to say, these are actually the unsung heroes of the Star Wars universe, and nobody knows about them. To me, what this movie does extraordinarily well, I mean, listen, it's not to the level of a Saving Private Ryan or a Thin Red Line or a really great war movie.
Totally agree with that.
But what it does do, I think, is initially the talk was Gareth Edwards wants to make a war movie.
Mm.
And this movie, despite some reshoots, I think I could win a $1,000 bet on one scene in particular.
Which was the reshoot.
That was a reshoot in this movie. I think Gareth Edwards achieved that because I think this movie actually, in the Star Wars universe, talks about self-sacrifice, putting a mission above yourself and what some of the consequences are of doing that. This is the first Star Wars movie, I have to say, maybe with the exception, again, of Empire Strikes Back, that when people die in this movie, there is a real sense of stakes and loss and people actually putting themselves on the line. And that's different than a Star Wars movie. I actually appreciate how different, and to be clear about this, I was not a fan of monsters.
Right.
I sort of liked Godzilla, but thought it was kind of lacking. This movie, I think, actually has a thematic and emotional weight. I actually found it pretty joyous, I have to say, because I thought that the intelligence that's brought to bear in this movie, the quality of most of the performances, and we'll get to that in a second, is really striking. And also, people are going to see this movie on the big screen anyway.
Yes.
This movie looks different than Star Wars movies do.
It does.
And I actually love, because the one thing I do think that was great in Godzilla is I think Gareth Edwards has this beautiful widescreen sense in terms of composition.
It works in Monsters too.
Yeah, it's decent in Monsters, but you know, he works with cinematographer Greg Fraser, who shot Zero Dark Thirty. This movie has a great, gritty, grimy, dark look, but at the same time you have these battle sequences out in outer space. They're, I think, the most gorgeous thing that ever existed in a Star Wars movie. I don't think anybody has ever done what he has done in terms of actually making the battle sequences seem... For me, I think you feel the same way about the Star Wars movies in general. They're a little more kind of jokey and fun and that. There's a real kind of scope and grandeur to this movie. It's far from perfect, but I have to say I was... As it went along and as it found its rhythm and as I kind of got used to its rhythm, I was... pretty blown away by this.
I have to say I'm surprised to hear that, and not just because I'm sitting next to you. To me, let's start unpacking some stuff. Let's start unpacking some of my problems then. To me, I like the characterization when it comes to Jyn Erso. Like, I don't understand the Forest Whitaker character at all. Apparently, he is from some sort of other franchise.
I cannot unpack that. I cannot explain that.
Like, his character doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. He seems to... Their relationship, which is... You know, we get this opening sequence where we see, like, the thing that gets her off on her journey. The idea that she loses her mother and her father is brought off by Ben Mendelsohn, who is mostly good. I think he's good in the role as kind of a middle manager there. He's got this sort of, like, middle manager menace that I think works well to him. There's an insecurity to his menace.
I would say Mendelsohn's the big disappointment. He's the one where I was so excited.
Because he's got that danger to him and everything.
Yes.
We get this big sequence, and then we see the Forest Whitaker character, and apparently then he raised her or something. We literally get nothing of what happened in the next 13 years of her life, other than the fact that it becomes an important plot point that they need to break her out of jail and then go get her and to go get some information from him. That is, like, to me, whatever your thoughts about Force Awakens, there is a clear emotional through line for each one of those characters. We have an idea of what their story is, what their motivations are, what they've gotten here. Our lead character is essentially a plot device. We don't get a lot of her story. We know that she wants to have a relationship with her father, and he calls her Stardust, and hey, that comes in handy too. And there's a lot of stuff with that, but all of her story, like, again, not that Finn and Rey and Poe are like these deep, full-dimensional characters. This is not, these are not Manchester by the Sea, you know? I mean, this is, like, these are not fully formed. But there's an emotional through line for them that ties into the film. And here, I don't really feel like that's there for her. I also think Diego Luna's character is really lame. Like, both of those guys, they have no, there's no, Poe and Finn and Rey have personalities, and they're fun, and they have, like, an emotional thing together. Here, there's at one point a hint at some sort of romantic thing, but then it kind of drops it. And you talk, again, I don't want to get into the details of the ending, but, like, you know, you talk about having stakes, and you talk about, and I agree, I do feel like there's an unpredictability to what's going to happen to these characters that's usually not there in these movies. I'd fight you a little bit on that, but I think there's something to that. But I don't think that their connection is played out that well. I also don't think that either one of them is particularly interesting on their own, particularly him. And because of that, I feel that, like, they are meant to be these things that gets the plot to here and gets the plot to there. The idea, and to me, the two interesting characters in this are Donnie Chin, who plays a blonde. Do you remember the name of the character? I don't remember the name.
No,
I mean, they're not like John or something.
Right.
It's like, but he plays a some sort of protector who is blind but cares very deeply in the Force and wants to, and there's an emotional through line. He also has some very cool battle scenes, and they're very kind of fun. But that feels like a fanboy thing. Like, clearly, like, that's the guy that everyone is really into, the fanboy guy. And then we have the robot. We have the cool Chappie, who, again, has his moments, but you don't think he doesn't feel beamed in from another movie?
I don't.
With everything else going on. And then there's, like, the wisecracking guy.
Yeah, but he does it in such a way that it's so deadpan, it's so wry, that to me, in some ways, this obviously is sort of like a Dirty Dozen kind of movie. But as opposed to an actual Dirty Dozen movie we saw this year, Magnificent Seven, this movie actually feels like all the people are in the same universe, as opposed to, we'll get one of these and one of these and one of these. These people actually felt organic and kind of cohesive in a way that I didn't actually have that problem. I agree that Diego Luna is one of the weak spots in the movie. I think the problem is, even though Felicity Jones is covered in muck most of the time, she's a star, and you can't deny that.
Yeah, she's great. But
she pops in a way that Diego Luna simply does not in this movie. I think that that is a limitation to the movie. I don't think it's a big problem. There is enough of a them growing closer because of them being in combat together that's acceptable to me without me thinking, oh, they're going to fall in love and like that. They actually didn't. There's hints of that. But to me, the hints are as far as it goes, and that's fine. I like Donnie Yen quite a lot. I think he's actually really fun. And again,
I think
that character is actually more emotional than what the journey that he goes on in that movie is actually much more. He's not just a cool badass. I think there's actually more to that character. For me, and I like Force Awakens. I want to be very clear right. about that. But I like it less than you do.
Right.
To me, the problem that Force Awakens has is the same thing. Here are new people doing the same thing. This movie, Rogue One, though, it has... I agree. I think it starts slowly. I think once it's like its prologue of sort of setting up who Felicity Jones's character was when she was a little girl, I think after that, it's kind of slow.
Right.
But I actually like the fact that this one, I didn't know where it was going. That I legitimately felt more like the story goes in different directions and is more interesting. As much as I liked Force Awakens, there is a part of me that kind of goes, yeah, but they're just doing episode 4 all over again. They have to defeat a Death Star. They have to go do this. This one has its own kind of like rhythms and feel. And again, I feel like this movie is, that's why I asked you afterwards. This movie feels legitimately darker in a way that I really, really liked. I feel like Edwards kind of owned it. And really, it wasn't like what we complain about with the DC movies now, where it's like, oh, they're so dark or edgy.
Right. But, no, I agree with that.
And this movie, it feels more kind of lived in. Now, the problem, one of the problems with the movie is, and again, we're not going to reveal anything.
Right.
If you have not seen this movie yet, or if you have, you are going to know the scene I'm talking about. Because I think, Will, you know the scene I'm talking about. There is one moment in particular in this movie that you can tell. I'm pretty sure that was a reshoot. Because there's a sense that somebody at Disney was like, oh shit, we have to put enough stuff in this so that people will know, don't worry, it's a Star Wars movie. There are some characters that you remember. There are characters you like. When the movie does the thing of like, hey, guys from, you know, the saloon in episode four, you can feel a lack of confidence in terms of, but that's been true of a lot of franchises. That was true of Force Awakens. Unfortunately, we are stuck with that. I feel like we're stuck with these types of movies that have to reassure us, don't worry, there's stuff you remember.
Okay, can I talk about another thing I do not like?
Yes.
The Grand Moff Tarkin stuff. This is basically, if you don't, I mean, you'll know this, I'm sure this has come up, but Grand Moff Tarkin, which is Peter Cushing's character from the first Star Wars movie, is in this. He is a computer-generated version of himself. This actually, definitely not giving it away, but he is not the only character that pops up, and woof. Like, I'm telling you, it doesn't work. That is going to look so bad in 5 years from the technology. Like, to me, isn't that one of the things that drove us crazy about Lucas? Was that he would try these technical innovations that were not quite there yet, but really wanted to do it. There's not a single second where you don't look at him like, oh, that's a computer generation that I'm watching right there. There's actually other characters that are even worse than that in the movie added.
Right.
And I feel like that is, talking about a lack of confidence, that feels like a fan servicey thing that doesn't work, and take immediately, even if you're into the movie at that point, immediately pulls us out.
When Redacted shows up, I agree more with that. Cushing actually didn't bother me.
I have to be honest.
To be fair, I actually like that in Tron Legacy as well, when the younger Jeff Bridges, which is essentially kind of the same.
Yeah, but there's an unreality to that. Like, there's meant to be a little bit of an unreality to the Jeff Bridges character in that.
Right.
Here, this is supposed to be a physical person walking around that that Ben Mendelsohn is interacting with, and he looks like he's interacting with the way that Harrison Ford directed in Jabba the Hutt when George Lucas brought back.
I think it looks better than
that. Yeah, I mean, it looks better than that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look any more
real. The Cushing stuff, I gotta be honest, it didn't bother me. It's definitely noticeable. There's no question that you look at it and go, wait, that's not a human being right there. But I have to say, it didn't bother me. I think it actually speaks to the thing I like about, in general, what Edwards does in the movie, where the special effects, I feel like, for the most part, are pretty much, and this is, I think, where it's different than the prequels. There's not so much of it in every frame that you don't feel like it's... I actually rewatched part of the prequels on TNT, I guess it was this weekend, or TBS, one or the other. They're so garish when Cushing shows up, and he's not that much.
He's more than I would have thought. I thought we were going to get one scene with him. He's a recurring character. There are actual times where he's giving key plot points that we're supposed to be very invested in. Because I thought at first, like, oh, he's just going to be there for a couple seconds. They're showing, hey, look what we can do. But then he comes back, and then he comes back again. And I'm like, and I'm sorry, I'm out at that point.
Right.
Like, this is not a real character. This is not a real person playing this character. And it's not even, like, the difference between that and, say, the in Force Awakens, the big character, the big tall guy that,
right.
That they're all going to. That's obviously, like, there's an unreality of that character that's very much easier to accept than for us to sit and watch and, like, oh, wow, that looks like Peter Cushing. It doesn't. It looks like a video recreation of Peter Cushing.
See, because the Emperor or whoever that person is, that was actually bugged me. But in this movie, I gotta say, it didn't. I think for me, because it's a selective thing in the overall movie, it didn't actually bother me. I mean, I can only explain it as I knew it wasn't him and I knew it was different, but it didn't take me out of the experience.
Yeah, and so. To me, I agree with you that the second half is a lot stronger than the first half. I wonder if it's going to be a different experience for everybody. But for me, because so much of that after we get the title, essentially, like we get the backstory and then we get the big Rogue One thing there. It drags a lot. Like, there's a lot where, like, well, this isn't working. Like, this is not. And to me, without the emotional things, again. We keep harkening back to Force Awakens. But for me, the thing that surprised me the most of Force Awakens was how much I actually cared about those three people, specifically Rey and Finn. Like, how much, like, and even Kylo Ren, really, in a way. How much, like, I was like, wow, it's very cool to see Han Solo again. It's very cool to see Princess Leia again. And look, I think, not to spoil Force Awakens, but Luke comes back at some point.
Right.
But as cool as it is to see that, and I did like that experience. I still feel like that works now. To me, the takeaway was, well, I can't wait to see what these characters do. Like, I care about these characters. I'm curious about where they're going. And that was just something, even though I did not know the futures of these characters the way that once I caught into Force Awakens, like, oh, it's going to be kind of like episode 4, then I could get a guess how things were going to go with each of these characters. I did not think that Oscar Isaac was dead 10 minutes into the movie. Like, I get it.
Right.
But I care about those characters. There's something to them. There's a life and there's a fun to them that's just not there, frankly, with any of the characters in this movie.
Yeah, it's hard to argue that because to me they're so full of life. And so because they're going on what's essentially a suicide mission and because it's so dangerous, I like how this movie, it's not the movie has to be fun or no fun or whatever. But I think Edwards gets this movie right of understanding that this movie has to play on a different level. It has to play on a level of, we don't know if we're going to be able to pull this off. I mean, we know they're able to, but we don't know exactly how it's going to play out. And we also don't know, who makes it out, who doesn't. And so because of that, there is such a sense of me, I can only say really caring about, and frankly, when certain people in this movie, who we have mentioned, don't end up making it, it does affect me. Because there's more of a sense that as an individual putting their life on the line for a cause that, again, I think the movie does this pretty well, there's a certain argument that the movie makes, which is the rebellion that amazing? Does the rebellion know what it's doing? Is the fact that they want to take down the Empire, though that's a laudable goal, does the Rebel Alliance actually know what it's doing? Are all of their motives actually entirely pure and wise? And I think that, again, it doesn't hit you over the head, but I think all that stuff is actually really, really interestingly done, so that there's actually a sense of not just are they going to find the plans, but what does this actually mean? What's this about? I think the movie is incredibly fun. I think the action sequences are pretty terrific. I think when Lucas in Return of the Jedi had like the three-way battle at the end, outer space, Endor, and then the lightsaber, that was incredibly innovative. This movie kind of does something pretty similar, I feel like, with the end. And I think it's really, really well done. There are some great callbacks to Empire Strikes Back in this movie in terms of just like, without giving anything away, the way things are staged, the way things are framed, where it's like, and it has the same kind of power that I feel like Empire Strikes Back does. I actually, because Edwards was not a filmmaker that had meant much to me, I was kind of from the beginning really, really impressed. I think Greg Fraser, his cinematographer, deserves a lot of credit. I think the score, this is the first time we have a Star Wars score that John Williams did not write. it's actually pretty decent. It brings in some of the John Williams score, but it kind of does another thing. The thing I appreciate above the other things I've talked about is I actually think this movie takes legitimate risks. And I think the risks, because clearly I like the Cushing stuff more than you do, I was willing to go with those risks. I appreciate the fact that the movie didn't try to break the Star Wars franchise, but kind of looked at it from a different perspective. And I was... I cannot wait to see this again. I cannot wait to see it again.
Well, we have won a shirt. We'll get a good letter grades in a second. We have a shirt. By the time this podcast goes up, the embargo, we're still talking before the embargo. So one thing is certain, I'm going to get yelled at when that embargo breaks.
Again, I have talked to nobody, so right. I really have no...
I know, but it's a fanboy movie. It's a fan... Like there's a certain... Right. Again, there's a certain type of people that this could be a lot worse than even I think it is,
right.
And people would still like it. So I actually thought you'd be on my side of history on this one, Grayson, and you're not. So what'd you give it?
I gave it an A-.
Wow, I gave it a C.
Well,
this is probably as dramatic of a break as we have actually had, particularly over a movie so high profile.
Not since The Witch, I think.
Well, that's true.
That's true.
And thematically similar movies
right.
As well.
Well, look on the bright side, Will. This could be an X-Men apocalypse situation. And
I
was much higher on that than you were as well.
Yes, but I have a feeling I'm pretty sure I'm right on this one. So.
Felicity Jones is tremendous in this movie. I think
she's good.
She is really good.
And she's really good in Monster Calls and the movie she's in this year. Like,
she's very good in that too.
She's really, and she's also in the Dan Brown movie. She's in that movie.
She's actually kind of fun in that movie.
You know what I mean. So I think that she's good. I just think, and I mentioned this in my review for The New Republic, that I think she is good and she brings as much as she can to a role that I don't think has an emotional resonance as some of the characters in the last movie. Even.
Yeah, I mean, and I like Daisy Ridley quite a lot in Force Awakens, to be very clear about that. But again, I like that it wasn't exactly the same. Is she a Jedi template?
I feel like you keep giving credit for this movie for not doing things that you feared it would do, rather than doing things the way it does well. And I'm not sure it does.
But I think I've explained those things pretty well.
I think you explained it incorrectly. But yes, I think that, listen, this is going to be a massive hit no matter what happens. And if you love Star Wars, a very good friend of mine is a Star Wars honk across the board. And he knew that I was seeing this. And I could not even, embargoes extended to text. So I wasn't going to say anything about it. But ultimately, I sent him a, I don't know, man, I may be on the wrong side of history of this, but I don't think this thing really works at all. And we'll see. We'll see. I have a feeling no matter what happens, more people are going to yell at me than yell at you. I don't think there's any question about that.
That's just normal, though.
Yeah, that's true. All right, so that is Star Wars Rogue One, a healthy conversation in which Grierson was totally wrong because he's a fanboy honk that just wants to be loved by Kevin Smith.
Yes. By the way, this is from two podcasts ago where I was made fun of being a Bellatar fan. So it's a wide swath.
Yeah, exactly. Get you a guy that can do both. All right. So this is episode 48. So this is going to be our last episode until after Christmas, before the new year, when we do our big top 10 movies of the year. This will not be on mine. Will it be on Grierson's? We'll see. Apparently, it's possible, which is insane to me. But anyway, so we're going to do our top 10 as you guys voted in your emails to me and at the Grierson Leaf New Republic.com. It's going to be a long show. It's going to be a long one. You're going to have the whole New Year's. That's what you should be doing on New Year's.
Right.
Don't go out and talk to your family or have fun. Or more accurately, if you have children like me, fall asleep at 8:30.
Right.
Don't do any of that. Instead, listen to our show because it's going to be a big, long, honking show. It's not going to be 5 hours, but it will be much longer than the average show. We apologize in advance on that. But so that'll be, I think, about 29th to the 30th. So everyone, have a great holiday. Have a great holiday. Enjoy watching Rogue One and being either Grierson is an idiot or Will's an asshole. One of those two things is going to happen. So as always, please subscribe to us on iTunes. Give us a nice review. We'll be back with a reboot section after the new year. Obviously, we didn't have one on this one. We won't have one on the next one. But, please send those in. We'll be back to our reboots after the new year. Otherwise, Grierson, nice chatting with you about... it's been a while. You know, I've known Grierson for a very long time. And one of the nice things about our friendship is I can continually be surprised. And this is not what I was going to be.
Well, as a wise man once said, I'm full of surprises.
Yeah,
this is our 10 Cloverfield Lane. We're in a bunker. We have no idea what's going on in the outside world. We voiced our opinions, and then one of us will be beaten up severely.
I'm chained to the goddamn radiator. all right, everyone. Have a great holiday. We'll be back with our top 10s after the Christmas holiday. Be safe, Kirsten.
Bye.
There has been an awakening. Have you felt it? What did that?